Just Not Good Enough with Chaz House on FUBAR Radio.
Right. Why am I feeling nervous about this one?
I don't know. Maybe it's because it's me.
It's you. Yeah, I know you.
It's recreating a work situation.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, Christ. Yes, it's all going to come back to me, isn't it? All that shit on the... Oh, dear. Right. First of all, I'd like to welcome Wendy Edwards, who's joined me on Just Not Good Enough. Wendy and I used to work together about 5 years. We worked together, didn't we? And we've done some charity work together and
various startup companies.
I forgot all about those as well, actually. And the Lucky Onion. Let's not forget the Lucky Onion, which is a spin-off from the Superdry entrepreneur founder. Before we get into the meat of this, could you just say a few little words about yourself and, you know, what you've done, why you think you might be here?
I think a big part of why I might be here links into your title, Just Not Good Enough, because along the journey of my career and life in general, imposter syndrome is one of those things that often appears its ugly head. And I think it does for many people. But anyway, we'll probably segue back into that. So, my career started off training as a company secretary with Rio Tinto Z. And then led me setting up my own consulting business, and I've worked with all sorts of exciting clients.
Why did you do that? Why did you do your consulting when you obviously got a career going?
Because I wanted to manage my time. I'd become a mother, and so I wanted more flexible working arrangements. So it fitted in beautifully.
But you never went back, did you? You never went back?
No, the only time I went back was when I'd gone as a consultant to Superdry and they persuaded me to go on the payroll, which I did for a few years.
Did you?
Yes, I did. And then when I left in 2015...
I was a finance director, I didn't know that.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
And went back to consulting and I haven't looked back. And, you know, even now, literally now, clients are saying, come on to the payroll. I'm like, no.
How do you deal with the uncertainty of it, though? Because it's... I did it for a while when I got fired at various places. You do interim rather than consulting. But it's feast and famine, isn't it? You get paid well when you're in work, but you can get nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a period to start with where there was just nothing. And that was when my daughter was just doing her A-levels before she went off to uni. But actually, it was...
That's good and bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it was one of the best times. The house was immaculate. There was always a beautiful meal on the table. And Christmas was wrapped up beautifully with lovely homemade decorations. But it didn't last for long. And actually, it was probably about four or five months was long enough because I would have got bored after that. And it's the financial worries as
well.
Yeah,
yeah.
So since then, there's never been a famine, I have to say.
Well, you're obviously very good. I'm going to embarrass you now.
Well,
I did say I was going to.
You did warn me.
I did warn you. I'm going to read your LinkedIn profile.
Oh, gosh.
Is it up to date?
Pretty much so.
Mine isn't. It's appalling. Mine isn't. But anyway, right. It says here, executive and non-executive director and company secretary, right? With extensive experience in commercial operations and strategic development, specialising in corporate governance, listed company regulation, compliance with legal and regulatory obligations, and administration in the charity and commercial sector with a view to enabling and facilitating successful business growth.
Yes.
Wow.
Because so much in the business world is reasons why not to do things. And I would say a big part of what I do is facilitating. And when the law says you can't do it, the regulation says you can't do that, it's not about bypassing it. It's about doing it in a way that everybody can be comfortable, that they haven't crossed the legal line, but at the same time, business can go forward.
How do you deal with the, you know, the classic entrepreneur that you were working for at Superdry, as indeed I was, who doesn't quite like doing things by the rules, should we say?
No, it's really, really challenging because their way is the only way. And... They don't understand or believe in rules. So it's about explaining.
They're disruptors, aren't they?
Yeah,
exactly the same
very
thing.
Much so. We need them in society because they create job opportunities and creativity and growth and all the rest of it. But they do struggle with regulations and reasons why not to do. And a good example is in Superdry. you know, the founder couldn't understand why I needed HR. In his eyes, you're either in the door and I'll pay you, and if you're not, you're out of the door and I don't pay you. Why would I need a human resource?
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's an oversimplified view on life.
Do you know what? I mean, when I joined Superdry, he didn't even want a finance director. Can you believe that?
That's ridiculous.
I mean, he probably didn't at that point, because it was, I think it was 25 million and Lee was there working really well and doing well and all that sort of, doing all the right things. But commercially, he made all of the decisions, of course. And then, in fact, it was one of the first things he said to me, or said to somebody else, you know, when they said, you need a finance director. He says, why do I need a finance director? I've got, you know, like with the analogy going back to his market stall days, you know, his market stall is his shop window. Underneath the stall is his warehouse, and the amount of money he's made is the cash in his back pocket.
And that's his profit in his eyes, because he's already paid for the stock.
Oh, yes. Well, in that case, it probably is his profit, actually. But, well, no, of course it's not. But it's what he's got to buy the next round of stocks with. But, yeah, and then he said, well, why do I need one? And because we were going to go through the listing process, he did. He had to have one. And I think it was a bit begrudgingly, actually.
Well, in the same way it was when he was told he had to have non-executive directors. He was like, well, why would I need them?
Oh, why? God.
And then I remember the conversation, we were having a strategy day, and he looked at me as I was batshit crazy. And why do I need a strategy day? Go offsite. I know what the strategy is.
I know.
And we did manage to go offsite.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yes. I mean,
because what was it? Rio Tinto. Is it Rio Tinto?
Rio Tinto, yes.
Yeah, the people that you meet there are, at the very top, are very strategic, because they have to be. And, you know, they do things the right way and, you know, there's process and structure and all that sort of stuff. And that's the background that I came from as well. And then all of a sudden you and
it's the other extreme.
Yeah, are thrown into this
And there's
thing.
Something that's gloriously delicious about it, this very simple view on life, but it's not the real world of survival and compliance, is it?
No.
Particularly when you're listing.
No,
you're going on the
not.
London Stock Exchange.
Yes, that was an interesting period, wasn't it? Anyway, we'll come back to that, I'm sure. But so... You must have experienced immense pressures at certain points, particularly when you're, you know, being a company secretary
Massively.
For a big PLC. Well, even Superdry, actually, which turned into a really big PLC.
And on the journey, so before Superdry with Rio Tinto, I think one particularly horrific event, sadly it was a death, and it wasn't a mining death, it was in one of our UK operations, and it was in a factory, which was a real cash cow. So there had to be, the factory had to be shut down. There was a sort of potential, an announcement on the stock market, because it was one of those sort of, well, we've had to shut down the process that has a potential profit warning while we investigate the death. And because I was the company secretary, I was very much the person dealing with the legal case. And, you know, it was coroners and, you know, and a family who had lost their income generators with children.
And their loved one as well, for that matter.
So, and that took 18 months to unravel. And actually, it turned out that it wasn't to do with the process. It was to do with the fact he kept birds at home, and he had a very allergic reaction to the bird dust from the bird muck. But obviously, it was a horrid journey to go down for everybody.
So how did you deal with that? I mean, personally, because, I mean, those things can be seriously traumatic, can't they?
Very, very traumatic. I mean, in the moment, you just deal with it. But the stress on your body, I guess, you know, I was late 20s. I know more now as to what that is, because of, I think we're more aware of, you know, how our adrenals fire up, cortisol levels fire up. You're in flight mode, aren't you? Because you're having to protect everybody, and you're investigative mode.
It's amazing how that can get you through, isn't it? I mean, the adrenaline rush is like you
very
say,
much so.
You know, I mean, I've experienced it myself, where you just have so much to do that you just don't even have time to think about how much you've got to do.
And it was, you know, it was serious. It was a criminal investigation.
Oh,
health and
blimey.
Safety were on it, blimey, and they were very clear. Depending on how you answer this, Wendy, there's a noose around the directors' necks, and that may or may not get tightened. So,
oh, that's appalling.
Because and then you realise that's approach to some of the health and safety inspectors.
Dreadful. Yeah. So there's nothing like putting you on the spot here, is there?
So, and then to you know, there was obviously the family to deal with, there was the business, and then there was the legal investigation. So it was a number of work streams.
Did you take that pressure home with you? Did it, and that in that particular instance?
Yes, because that's kind of inevitable, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I say you can't help but avoid it. And did that, because you've got a lovely daughter called Amy.
That was before she was born.
Oh, was it? Right, okay.
Yeah, that was before I became a mother. And then on the back of that, Rio Tinto, I mean, they needed someone who was qualified in health and safety, so I went off and became a qualified health and safety person, Nubosch diploma on the Land Rover plant.
No way, did you?
Which is never wasted because it gives you an excuse to be curious in any business and an appetite for asking difficult questions and risk awareness. But at the same time, it helps you to be that.
Risk awareness, I get that.
Yeah, it helps you to be that enabler of not getting bogged down with bureaucracy.
So, I mean, we're here talking about mental health. Mm. And I'm trying desperately to get you to come around to talking about mental health.
Yes.
And just before you go there, on the first aider type stuff, health and safety first aider, I mean, I've heard stories about people who've been trained to spot mental health, and you know, and they've had a morning session and they now come out onto the business floor or whatever it happens to be, and they're now supposedly mental health experts. I mean, that's a nonsense, isn't
it? Absolutely. It's a big part of my life, I guess. Up until probably the last 10 years ago, I wasn't aware that I had, what I call it, black dog, sort of a darkness. My friends know of it as black dog, and we have a language.
That's Winston Churchill.
It is, yes. And you know, my friends will text, how's black dog? Is he in the kennel?
Oh, really?
And I'll respond, it's lurking. I've managed to keep it. Oh, no, black dog's, firmly.
You take it out for a walk?
Yes, well, sometimes.
I bet you do, because it follows you around, doesn't
Very
it?
Very much so.
And I find that, I get this as well, and I find that the size of the dog depends on how I feel.
Yes.
So it could be a nice little poodly thing wandering along. You've got a sausage dog, haven't you?
I have got a sausage dog.
Yeah, and it's black as well.
It is black, and a great source of joy. But I guess, yes, so on the journey, you learn different skills of how to deal with black dog. And I guess when I look back now, I learnt those skills in my late teens, 20s.
That's early.
It is. But then, sadly, I kind of dismissed them a bit because I was in the work world. And I thought, well, I don't need them. I've got work. So I think I probably hid behind work. And it was the 80s. Work was a bit addictive, wasn't it? We were the yuppies. It was about, cars, houses.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
So I think on the journey, I've lost my way, if I'm honest. And So I've really come back to...
What lost your way in dealing with
recognising how to look after yourself, yes. And I would say it was probably 10 years ago, around the time of, Amy, my daughter, being more independent, then going off to university. And then it comes back to, who am I? What's my purpose?
Because you started exercising then, didn't you?
I did, very much so. I mean, I always had done as a teenager, and I guess that's in hindsight, that's the dopamine serotonin, isn't it, that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Perhaps I'd neglected it at times as a career girl, which you do, don't you, when you're in the office at 8 and you get home.
Had you neglected it, or were you hiding?
Hiding. I think a lot of it was hiding.
Yeah. It's such a shame, that, isn't it? There must be millions of people out there, not just here, but around the world, who go through the same experience as you, hiding behind your outward persona.
And society encourages you to, it's the next promotion, or it's the next holiday, whereas actually sometimes just slow down a bit.
Yeah.
And actually I think a really pivotal time was for me, and it's more of a spiritual thing, and I picked up on it only last week, in India that we tend to think through our hearts, in the West we tend to think through our brains. So I think overthink, don't we?
You could actually extend that analogy to men.
Yes, it would be different parts of the anatomy.
Stomach, yes. A man thinks through his stomach.
But I do remember a pivotal time, and it was a big business conference where there was the in-house psychologist who was always, talking to the senior team, working out who were there for succession. I remember him. And I was shocked at his reaction. I was shocked at my reaction because we'd been talking, and then he said to me three times, and it was the fact it didn't register. He said, "Wendy, I didn't ask you to say what you thought. I asked you to say what you felt."
Oh.
And it took him three times for it to really register. So I think that's a big part of mental health.
That's a big step forward, isn't
yes.
it? Because you're now thinking in a different
yes.
way. How long did that last, though? Did you revert back to...
Yes, very much so. Because yeah. that was early 90s. So,
yeah.
But now that's where I've come very much back more to that. And I think it's that you just make sure you slow down. You're not on a hamster wheel. You give yourself the time.
But that becomes harder and harder, doesn't it? Because if you are ambitious, which you clearly
yes.
are, and you want to get on, you have it's a competitive world out there.
Very much so.
So you have to work hard, work harder and faster and better than anybody else. And how the hell do you slow down when that environment is there?
Yeah, and I think particularly, you know, that was the 80s where, I'm not proud of it, but we did wear pinstripes. We thought we had to dress like men. I mean, it's mad.
That's,
it's bonkers,
oh,
isn't it?
For Christ's
it's weird,
sake,
isn't it?
Honestly, I know, I'm reacting like that now, but, you know, because today it would never happen.
No.
But, yeah, I remember it. I know.
And we had stilettos as well. Don't get me wrong.
Did you?
Yes.
What, with your suit?
Yes.
Oh,
so, you know, there was...
Oh, okay.
But I think the workplace has changed. I mean, not perhaps as much as we'd like it to be. And I guess that's what I see is different cultures. You get...
corporate cultures,
yes,
do you mean?
Yes. Yeah. You get... a good example, I had the privilege of working with Airbnb for 2 years, during the pandemic, actually, and that's a really good example.
It must have been quiet.
No, it wasn't.
That's a good time to slow down.
No, because it wasn't, because that's where they quietly... Because there was no global travel, they identified, we've got all these empty beds and we've got all these medics who mustn't go home to their families... Let's give those.
So they Airbnb'd them?
Yes.
Did they?
Yeah, they did, and
that.
They paid for it.
Oh, blimey, that is busy then. Yeah.
And then to have three founders who are now in, what, late 30s, they do happen to be male, but they weren't that sort of testosterone-driven, you know, bigger, we want more.
But they're
more.
Entrepreneurs. They're
yes.
entrepreneurs. And they were different entrepreneurs.
Very different, and very different from the start. Very much right. The world doesn't need, because they floated, the world doesn't need more billionaires that go and buy more jets, more houses. We've got to make sure we... have a foundation from the start to give back, and that doesn't seem to have been lost. So, you know, here we are.
So they set up a foundation to help who?
You know, when there was the Afghanistan crisis 2 years ago.
Oh, so there's global
good
causes or whatever.
They always get ahead with, you know, global initiatives that, and they don't always bang the drum.
Well, they don't bang the drum at all.
No, but they, yeah. So that was a culture. That was high growth, very creative. But I think the key thing there was, and I really like this, from the board member, the general counsel, who I worked under his work stream. And it was all about his words. And I still use them today. Don't encourage dysfunctional behaviour. You know, if somebody is not owning something, call them out.
Mm. I wanted to touch on calling out stuff because... When you and I worked in Superdry, around the boardroom, and it was very different. I can't remember, did you join as we were listing?
Yes, I did, because they wanted a named company secretary in the prospectus. So, of course, that's why.
That's you.
Yes,
right,
yes.
Okay, that's good. Okay. So, so you, Kate, you didn't really see much before the listing, before the non-execs arrived?
I didn't,
arrived?
Because
yeah.
And I think one of the challenges there was, yes, there was... There were certain behaviours that should have been called out, and actually some of the non-executives should have called it out.
Yeah, okay. Just before we get to there, because this is, you know, I think this could be quite interesting. Actually, it's interesting for me to hear your perspective anyway. But it was a family business, run
yes.
business, and then it got to a certain size, and Julian decided he's going to float it. So we went through the listing process, and you sort of came in around the beginning of that, didn't you? And then we recruited these non-execs, one of which, I think, if I remember rightly, we all said no to. And then suddenly enough, funnily enough, at the first board meeting, he was there. Ridiculous. But the behaviour around the boardroom changed overnight, you know, and it was the non-execs, wasn't it? Am I making that up, do you
no,
think?
No, it was. And I think, obviously, initially, it was very hard for a founder to see the value of non-execs.
All they're doing is governance. That's demeaning it a bit.
And at the time, looking good on the coattails of a very successful float.
Yes.
Because the graft had been done, let's be honest.
And let's face it, getting paid very well for it,
very
actually,
much so.
Given the
yes.
amount of time that they put in.
I think Julian could see some of the value when life got a bit more rocky, because it wasn't just a smooth trajectory on the share price. And that's where, of course, the non-execs were expected to go and talk to City shareholders, along with you. I mean, they did it on their own.
But the you talked about... sorry, I've just pointed at you then. That's terrible, isn't it? That's an appalling piece of behaviour. Sorry. I mean, if you, I know
you've been told off.
No, I'm not, actually, surprisingly. But, you know, here I am, knowing that you're living with depression, you know, the black dog, and I'm pointing at you accusingly like that, you know. And what was I going to say now? I've forgotten. That's stupid.
Calling things out.
Oh, yes. So the behaviour round, we used to joke about it, didn't we?
We had to survive. We had military language, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
You know, going into the boardroom, have you stocked up the grenades?
Yeah.
Have you got
a helmet on?
Yeah, tin hats.
Yeah, tin hats. Mm. Yes, that's right. And in the trenches. Mm. And oh, yeah, I know. I mean, but that, you shouldn't be going.
Because you're going
like
into
that.
The boardroom for a bashing. I mean, don't get me wrong. Boardrooms are there for challenge. That's healthy, isn't it?
As far as I'm concerned, being challenged is absolutely fine. It's the manner and the way in which they do it. And, you know, sometimes it just got out of line, didn't it? And you're right. It's up to the other executives to call it out, the other non-executives to call it out when somebody behaves badly. But you see, I secretly think that they were sat behind this person, this particular person that we know, and well, I was going to say love, but clearly we don't, who was behaving very badly. And they sat behind it thinking, oh, I'm glad he's doing that and not me. Yeah, he's on the case, isn't he? He'll give these guys a hard time. Almost as if it was accepted.
And I think from other boards I've seen, other boards, the dynamic would be the chairman would call that out. I've seen that elsewhere.
Yeah, that's where I think we've got to now. Mm. I'm not sure that the chairman at that time was particularly good at that. He never did it. Although, I don't know if you know this, but after one particularly bad session, I actually went to see him. And I said, I'm not going to use his name because it's public knowledge anyway. But I said, look, you know, I'm quite happy with being challenged. In fact, that's exactly what I want people to do, because it makes you think differently and it makes, you know, you have a different perspective on things. But why does he have to behave like such a twat?
Mm.
You know, why can't he just do it with a little bit of humanity?
It's the humility that's so important.
It is, isn't it? And the chairman said, okay, all right, you know, I hear what you're saying. So he went away and had a chat with this guy. And the next meeting, he was clearly not out of sorts, but he was clearly struggling to behave, because his natural type is to be aggressive and talk over people and shout at them.
It doesn't get the best out of the person you're trying to challenge.
Well, when you're living with depression, it has the exact opposite. It drives you down.
It's like a shutdown, isn't it?
Yeah, you disengage, your eyes go glazed, and you think, fuck it, I really don't care about this anymore. But interestingly, the meeting after that, so he was okay for one meeting, although he was, you know, looked a little odd, actually, because it wasn't him. And the next meeting, he reverted back to type, and it was never mentioned again. Mm. So the chairman never called it out. Nobody called it out. And I was so disillusioned by that, because, it's quite hard to put your hand up and say, I'm struggling here, isn't it? Even today, it's hard.
And what about, because there were board evaluations then, where you were invited to give feedback. You were on the board. Did you feel then that you could?
No.
No.
No. And when I went through my therapy, I realise it goes all the way back to when I went to boarding school and was bullied and all that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I, for my whole life, I've hidden behind it.
Mm.
And I don't know, you just didn't. The stigma around it was ridiculous. Mm. So how do we get then people at work to, I could say admit, but it's not the right word, to just say, look, I'm really struggling here. I need some help and support. How do we do that? Because I've got this one little thing which I learnt actually from the, I think it was Margaret Thatcher's government, would you believe, when the property market was going through the roof and interest rates, mortgage rates, you could get tax relief on your mortgage interest.
Yes, I do remember that.
And they stopped it. Mm. And what that did, that one single thing dropped the property market overnight, and it suddenly went into a little decline, not massive. But it's because then buy-to-lets weren't working, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it suddenly becomes more expensive. And it's those little tiny interventions that can be really, really powerful. And I've got one that I will share with you, but I'd be interested to see what your views are in terms of, is there anything that you can think of that like that, or indeed anything actually, that will gives people access to being able to hold their hand up without fear of retribution?
In terms of sort of bullying or...
Anything. Or even just to admit that they're struggling that day.
I mean, I see various successes with whistleblowing policies. And, you know, again, it depends on the advancement of the culture as to whether people are going to feel that they can trust whistleblowing. And, you know, we can look at the National Health Service at this point in time.
That has been a serious
letdown, hasn't there, in massive ways.
Which has
massive ramifications that we've hardly seen the start of yet, have we?
Yeah. Oh, that makes me feel horrible, that does.
In other cultures... I mean, I've had it recently with a current client where behaviours have just been just unacceptable, where, you know, grown-up lawyers sort of broken by one individual. And I'm
pleased. Is it usually one individual, or is it...
It's allowed by other people.
Yeah.
And it's not jumped on. I think it's not jumped on early. I think I guess that's what I enjoy from having done lots of interim. You know, within a couple of days of going in a business, I get a feel for the pulse.
Yeah, because that behaviour, you're right. You are right. I mean, and you don't even need to be in the boardroom to get that.
It's even from the email language,
yeah.
You know, the sloppiness, or, you know, is the subject matter clear? I see so much sloppiness.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I noticed even Ben Fogel talking about it yesterday. I happened to see, and he's quite, it's something that's close to my heart, keyboard warriors, people who aren't big enough or strong enough to come and say, Chaz, you know, you spoke to me a little bit harshly yesterday or whatever. I know you're under pressure to get some numbers out. Instead, I hide behind an email.
Yeah.
You know, why can't I go and have a conversation?
Yeah.
Because in that moment...
Well, that happens a lot in organisations, doesn't it? Where issues just get passed around. So the issue comes in on an email. You respond or say that, and you think that's the issue dealt with. But it's bloody not.
Exactly.
It's, you know...
There's a little uncomfortable smell there.
Yeah.
The next time I see you, you're a bit sort of, well, you could have come and spoken to me.
And we all know that emails are incredibly cold.
Yeah.
The intonation isn't there. There's no humanity behind it because it's just a set of words. And people will read them differently.
Yes.
Because the interpretation is going to be different.
So a lot of it is about encouraging people to pick up the phone. I know it's obvious.
But even the phone's not good either.
No.
Which is why I'm really pleased you're here. Because sometimes we do these things by Zoom, and it's different.
The nuances are different.
It's harder, actually. Yeah.
You know, it's no surprise, is it, that at the moment there's this call for people to come back to the office. Not 5 days a week. We don't have to go back 5 days a week. There's lots of benefits in having a hybrid working pattern. But it comes back to, there's a benefit in our mental health, isn't there? Because we thrive if we connect with one another.
We're a social species, for God's sake. So you know, sitting at home, I just think it's a recipe for disaster.
And I see that in my own, you know, I think, well, over the last, I've sort of, you learn to calibrate your way, and you know what the markers are, and you know when to take action. And I don't have to rely on medication, that's great, but I know what levers to pull.
Can you stave it off then? Can you get yourself better?
Yes.
Can you?
Yes. And I, you know, I did the GP route. I did the NHS referral counselling. Had the offer of medication, and it's nice knowing it's there. But at this point in time, I haven't needed it.
Wow.
And it's a mixture of things.
I can't do that. I mean, once I start down the slippery slope, it's really tough for me.
And I know everybody's different because we're all different. Chemical beings, aren't we?
Yeah. And some people get it really badly, and some people don't. Some people have it all the time, and some people just get sharp spikes. You know, I mean, we are all really different, and there is no one answer. But just coming back to work, see, because I have this idea that coming back to my mortgage rate, interest rate, tax relief idea, a simple intervention would be to try and persuade a chief executive or a chairman to put their hand up and say, yes, I'm feeling vulnerable today. Because that then gives everybody in the organisation permission to do the same without fear of anything happening to them. Because I don't know, research says that the people who do then suddenly say, I'm struggling a bit, they, you know, I think of the, I can't remember who it was who said it, but 60% of people fear their about their mental health. And of the 12% that put their hand up, they were either dismissed or demoted. I mean, that's appalling, isn't it? It's absolutely appalling. But that's because they hadn't got permission in the workplace to be to feel freedom to be able to do that. They didn't feel psychologically safe, which was Javier's expression last week or whenever it was. So creating that psychologically safe space, and one of the ways of doing it, I think, is for a very, very senior member, doesn't necessarily have to be a board member, but it has to be with the support of the board and the knowledge of the board, puts their hand up and says, I'm struggling today, you know. And then people learn how to deal with it. People feel safer about actually admitting it themselves. You know, time off, if you had a bereavement, everybody says that's fine. Time off for a mental health issue. You'd struggle to get that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So I don't. What do you think about that? I mean, because there's been one. There's one you mentioned.
Yes, was it back in 2011, Antonio from the banking sector, Lloyd's wasn't it?
Lloyd's, yeah.
And that was the announcement. Well, rather than what so often personal reasons, this was clearly the words used were for mental health issues. And on the back of that, it seems that there've been all sorts of words in the workplace, like the mental health first aiders. We see lots of wellness, well-being days, don't we?
Yeah.
Across the work.
I'm sorry.
But is it really getting to a granular level?
I'm skeptical about all that.
Yes, I guess the key test is if I'm in my early 20s, because I guess I'm at a safe part of my career where I can talk about it.
So am I, because I'm retired.
Yes.
It's bloody great.
But if you're on the trajectory and
it's a big dilemma,
would they?
Isn't it?
But they actually said, I've got mental health issues.
Yeah.
Actually, my daughter did.
Did she?
A few weeks ago. And I thought she's
a doctor, isn't she?
Yeah. Junior doctor. And that it was very well handled. It wasn't dismissed. And it was very much, let's look at your caseload. Great. You go home. We'll sort this out. Because actually, in that situation, to have somebody who is not in the best mental state in that moment, on that day, why would you want them? Yeah.
Apart from being compassionate
to the
person involved, the frontline NHS, you're in a very pressurised situation, which literally could be about life and death. So you need people to be feeling okay, because otherwise their decision making might well be a bit awry.
We don't want it to be, you and I have never put our hand up when we were in the early stages of our career, because it would have been seen as a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
That's what you need to get over, isn't it?
But you're right. But then what happens is when you're feeling bad, you go in and you're not productive at all. You're just present, isn't it? I think there's a thing called presenteeism, isn't there?
Yes.
That's just not good for anybody, really. And arguably it extends the period of recovery, and it just could potentially make you feel worse.
And of course, then there's always going to be the challenge of people who misuse, I've got mental health issues. In other words, I can't be bothered. But that obviously has to be.
I know. It's really hard to say publicly what I think about that, because for fear that I'll get cancelled, except that my Twitter followings or whatever is so small, it wouldn't make any difference anyway. But it's like these cards, the discriminatory cards as a collective, sometimes do get played a bit too readily. And I don't doubt, that they've probably got mental health issues and so on. And they might have financial stresses as well, which doesn't help, and family pressures, and, goodness knows what's going on at home, and can they afford the mortgage, blah, 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 particularly these days. But there is, sometimes it just gets thrown out a little too quickly.
It does, maybe. Too glibly, yes.
Because like you and me, when you have a serious black dog mental health issue, that you don't need. In fact, actually, it's almost the opposite, isn't it? You almost don't play it.
Exactly. Because you want it covered up.
Yeah. And is that because of the stigma around it still?
I think it's partly the stigma, and partly because if you let go into it, you're worried, will you just sink down further, don't you? But sometimes your body needs to just rest and...
Yes,
come out the other side.
Yeah. My therapist says I need to slow down, and I find I can't. Mm. I don't know why. Maybe I have a low boredom threshold or something. In fact, she even suggested I might be ADHD as well. So I think, you know, I'm ticking them all off one by one. As you know, here we go. I don't know what's going to come next. I'm sure I've got OCD as well, whatever that is. But yes, slowing down is so really important. And just taking time out to go and sit in a field and or go and do a bit of forest bathing or whatever it is, and just,
which I've always had that love of nature, thank goodness, you know, from a young age.
Do you do it? Do you go out?
Absolutely.
Because you have to take your dog for a walk now, don't you? So in a way, you've got, I wouldn't say an excuse, but you have a purpose.
But before I had the dog, I was a great walker, because nature and having, whatever the season, having daylight on my eyeballs, seeing what the landscape.
That's an interesting way of doing it.
Has always been close to my heart. And actually, I've been reading two great books over the last few months. One is was a present, and it's written. It's called The Well-Gardened Mind, and it's written by Sue Stewart Smith, who's a horticultural psychotherapist. I'd never heard of that before.
What does that mean? She talks to plants?
No, she uses gardens to help people.
That wasn't even funny.
Recover from, well, quite often post-traumatic stress disorder, but equally serious black dog. Brilliant book. Great read.
Can you send it? I've got my pen. I need to take that down.
And her husband happens to be one of the key gardeners, garden designers behind the RHS Bridgewater Garden that's only about 2 years old, that is amazing, that's south
quite
of
a responsibility.
Manchester. Yes. Ooh. So the two of them together, their knowledge of plants and the benefits of working with nature. And she talks about community gardening across the globe and the benefits of, you know, soil on your hands, which I've always loved. It's one of my go-to, you know, go and do some pottering in the garden, go and do some potting, go and nurture your plants, and it does... help
yeah, do you know, I mean, part of my recovery, because I was very late in realising that I'd got the problems I have, and part of my recovery was doing the same thing. And so I now grow apple trees and pear trees from seed. So I must have planted out 60, 70 of them, and I've got another 25, 30 in pots waiting to go to be planted out somewhere. If you want an apple tree, you know.
Yes.
Right in, if you want.
Right
an apple
in.
Tree,
and she talks about the benefits of trees. Why are we so obsessed with trees? As she says, we used to live in trees. So no wonder when we look at them, that's our safe place. If we're recovering in hospital, we need to see trees.
Well, it is. You know, I've fantasized occasionally about walking through a jungle and a lion comes to get me, you know, and I'm apart from the fact they can probably climb trees. But, you know, you go up a tree because it is a safe space, isn't it? Yeah.
She talks about walled gardens being safe because if you've been battered by the outside world, you know,
No, you see, I don't get that. I need the open air. It's like, you know, Cleeve Common, which is near where we both live.
Yes.
I mean, being up on the top of that hill, you know, 360 degree view, 70, 80 miles
wonderful.
In every direction is just
I think it's a mood enhancer.
Yeah, it is. It is. And we should all do more of that.
Yes.
I don't do anything like enough because I think I'm fundamentally lazy.
No, I love it. I've always loved exercise as well. And I guess that's the... As we said earlier, the dopamine is the serotonin that they're the happy hormones, aren't they?
God, I'm so envious. I wish I could do that because I don't like exercise. I like doing stuff that gets you out of breath. So gardening, digging, mowing the lawn or whatever, you know, something like that. But not just running for running's sake. I find that terrible. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
That was the first, but the second book was about sleep, Why We Sleep, written by Matt Fletcher. And, you know, if we're not in a good space, our sleep gets disrupted. And, of course, sleep is so important to our mental outlook.
Isn't it just? I monitor my sleep in terms, because I've got Fitbit and does all that sort of stuff. And I know if I wake up and I look at that and see that it's not a good score, I'm thinking, I've sussed out already that I don't feel so good. And I don't think it's just sleep, though, is it? It's food, diet.
Oh, absolutely.
Sleep, diet, and exercise. If you can get those three right, you've got a really good chance of actually having a good day. And food, I mean, occasionally I eat rubbish. You know, a lot of us eat rubbish. I mean, you hear on the news recently about ultra-processed foods.
Yes.
You know, and so many people eat them. Well, I mean, they're not going to do you any good from your mental health point of view. You know, but then it comes to, and then, oh God, it's such a difficult one to break through. But then it comes down to being kind to yourself and being compassionate to yourself. And I just can't do that. I find that really difficult. Do you find that difficult?
Waiting well.
No, being compassionate.
Being compassionate.
To you.
To me. I've had to learn that more. And that, I think that links in with what we were saying earlier, imposter syndrome. I'm not good enough. And actually standing back and, hey, you are good enough. People...
Yeah, but you know,
it's alien to what we think, isn't it?
People say that to me. I don't believe them. It just goes straight over my head. I think about all the shitty little things that have been going on over the years. Like about a week ago, I remembered something that I did to a bloke when I was about 22. I mean...
Well, that's in the past. But that's, I know. That comes back to overthinking, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but I didn't plan it. I didn't think about it. It just came into my head.
Yes.
And I was in the car and I swore. I said, oh, for fuck's sake, why are you bringing that back?
Yes.
But I can't stop myself doing it. It just... And then you feel shameful and then you feel guilt and...
But that comes back to recognising that... And I think because sometimes you need humour with it. Our brain is like a muscle and it's a naughty muscle. It's cheeky. It's a bit of a bully and it likes to take over.
Which
feeds into what we were saying earlier. We live too much in our heads. That's living in your head. Because the reality is, yes, that might have been a bad event some years ago, but it's in the past. You can't change it now.
No.
Why indulge it?
You're right. No, look, I know you're right.
But we're all guilty of that because this living up there... rather than more living, which is what we said earlier,
from the heart
now.
Yeah. And I get angry at such stupid things like somebody in the wrong bloody lane on the motorway. I'm trying to stop myself doing it. It says, why am I wasting energy on these people?
Because someone summarised it brilliantly. Yes, was it Friday? I went to the gym and there was this great group of... They were all ladies, actually, in Stroud, Friday morning. And someone came a bit sort of like you, because she'd dealt with a ratty customer. Rah, 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 rah.
Yeah.
And as this one, I thought it was brilliant. She said, don't get angry about it. She said, think of your brain as rental space. You're allowing that annoying person to take up space in your brain.
Yeah, yeah. You shouldn't give them the benefit or the justice or the whatever the word is. I can't think of the word is.
No.
Of allowing them to do that to you.
That's not good use of your space, is it?
It bloody isn't. And I get angry at the fact I get angry. I mean, that's not a good sign, is it?
And that's too much thinking. And then that comes back to meditation is good, isn't it? And I know meditation can be very hard. And I studied transcendental meditation in my early 20s. And then it was all a bit sort of...
You were very early at realising, weren't you?
Yeah, but then I had to come back to it. And then did another course, which is, I think, easier to translate into plain English rather than it being a bit sort of Indian guru altar worshipping.
Yeah, it needs to be a simple language, doesn't it?
And this is from... It's fantastic, I think. Oxford Mindfulness from the Oxford University and a local to us, Gloucestershire, husband and wife, retired architects, Yanghu Architects. They both got behind it. And I'd signed up to do it 2019 in person. Of course, then we had lockdown 2020. So it was all online. But it really, and it was a lovely mix of international people. And it was more like brain gym in a good way that you can understand. Because it would pick up on that sort of annoyance that...
Yeah,
your brain taking you down that journey you didn't want to go on.
Yeah, and I do spend a lot of energy getting rid of the bad thoughts, and all that does is reinforce the fact that I'm not good enough. You know, and then when you've got somebody behaving badly at work, and having a go at you because you know, in amongst all the stuff that you've got going on, they've picked up the one thing that didn't go well.
And you become that battered child at boarding school, don't
you?
Yeah,
you do.
You're there in your shorts, looking up, feeling.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Humiliated.
Only in the summer.
Yes. But it's that humiliation that you go back to, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I'm joking about it right now. And that's me hiding behind it. I'm hide behind humour to mask the way that I'm really feeling. And, you know, we go out, don't we, with some friends every now and again. And we have a great chat and it's very open. It's very honest. In fact, I think those are the two golden rules. We talk about anything, but you have to be honest about it.
Very honest.
Yeah. And... I will bring humour into it to get rid of my awkwardness about trying to get you to laugh, to make you like me. You know, and my therapist says, because I do this with her as well. I don't need to do it with her. She doesn't need to feel one way or the other. She's totally and utterly non-judgmental. But then that costs you a hell of a lot when you come away from it. It's like you go out, you know, I go out on your, yes, on our nights. We have a fantastic time. We chat and we laugh and we joke and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then when I go home, I'll be on a bit of a downer. Mm. It's almost like I've used up all of my good chemicals.
Yes. And you're flat.
And I'm flat, and it could be horrendous, you know. And I'm quite often on company conferences. The first night will be fantastic. The next day, I really struggle to get out of bed. So I don't know.
Like you're overperforming almost.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm supposed to be interviewing you. We're interviewing me actually.
You said, right. I could ask questions.
Yeah, I did actually. God, that was a mistake. Yeah. Wasn't it? You see, there I go again. Mm. More bloody laughter, for Christ's sake. Although, having said that, I'm not feeling too bad today. Right. So where are we? I've got some other stuff to ask you. One of the things, the behaviour at Superdry. Just coming back to that. When this particular person was beating me up, did you notice anything different about me, either in the meeting or in the few days there afterwards?
Yeah, afterwards, you were just a shadow of yourself. It's like you're in recovery time.
Yeah, because that's exactly what was going
and
on.
And it's like a dog with tail between his legs, because you're just battered. But it felt directed to all of us, the internal executive. It didn't, I guess from our eyes, it didn't feel as though it was just at you, although you received it all.
Yeah, you see, I never even thought about anybody else.
But it could be you on the receiving end.
You
were the one who was eyeballed.
Yeah, because when you're presenting the numbers, that's and the majority of those meetings are about numbers and performance and, you know, reports on this and that. Well, how do you feel about an HR representative at non-exec level?
Speaking openly, not many HR people of the right caliber to step up to that level. When I've seen them step up, brilliant, but I would say 1 out of 10 of the calibre that are capable of really punching at
that
level.
Interesting. I've not thought of that yet. You're probably right. Mm. You're probably right. But okay, so not necessarily an HR type person, but somebody with that ability to have the HR agenda as part of their brief.
Yes, because it has to be, it's more the psychology of people, isn't it? And, you know, change management as well. It has to be more than just rewarding people, which so much of HR is about. It has to be the psychology of how do we get the best out of our people team, which a proper HR director.
Yeah, but what about that person to call out the bad behaviour as an independent? Because they're independent non-execs, aren't they?
They're good. Yeah.
So, you know, but how many are there around PLC boards that you've been on? None. Not one.
Which is madness, isn't it?
It is. And these board meetings happen behind closed doors, don't they? So, you know, everything else pretty much is out in the open. You know, you have open plan offices and so on. You deal with your staff in open plan. You might go behind a meeting room occasionally if it's going to be noisy or whatever. But ultimately, it will all come out because there will be actions that you've got to do and things that feedback from that meeting. But board meetings, there's almost like you close the door and there's a freedom to say whatever you want, how you want, knowing that it is confidential.
Yes.
And I just think that is so dangerous, really dangerous, because it allows people to behave badly and get away with it.
Well, and, you know, that bad behaviour isn't reflected in minutes, is it? Because that's...
No. Well, you'd know that. You wrote them.
Exactly.
I think I'm going to go back and read all the minutes you've taken. We'll see whether or not you did say Chaz bullied again today.
Because if you had that there, it'd be red
like
flags,
shit.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'd all be like that. The whole thing would be like that. Yeah. It's difficult. I struggle. Apart from getting the chairman or somebody or the senior manager to admit that they have they're struggling with a mental health issue. I really struggle to find out what you can do to make it better at board level, because it's all behind closed doors.
Yes.
And I've spoken to so many people, and quite often they talk about well-being initiatives and like we have here, you know, and whistleblowing things and so on. But actually, they skate across the surface a little bit, and you feel that there's a bit of lip service being done to it so that annual reports can have that tick. Yep, we've got, we look after our staff and so on and so forth. But the reality is, at the top level, it is bloody hard.
I think it's still hard, yes.
I did speak to a guy, Dr. Vikash Shah, I think his name was, from Manchester University, and he said, well, you've always got a choice, haven't you, as an individual? And I thought, that took me back a bit, actually. And he said, you know what it's like in businesses. It's tough. It's a competitive world. Yeah, there is the whole capitalist environment behind it. So it's incredibly powerful. And in order to look after yourself, to be compassionate to yourself, you don't have to be there. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you can actually just walk away and say, I don't want to do this because this isn't right for me. And he was right. So here I am. I was trying to say, well, look, hon, we need to do something for all of these people. And they say, well, look, they've got their own lives to lead. They can make their own choices. They could actually just walk away. And I thought about that, and I thought, yes, they can, but that doesn't address the issue, does it? For people who can't walk away because they're bills to pay,
exactly.
Families to look after.
They've got stuck on a hamster wheel of school fees or mortgages if that's what they chose.
Yeah. And then suddenly, that option.
But even those are choices, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Mm. But if you are a father, as I am, or a mother, as you are, you want the best for your children, so you commit yourselves into
these things. When you're in that chapter, I don't think you think it's a choice, do you?
No, you don't.
You want that stability.
You get sucked along with it, actually, because I don't know. I've never known what I wanted to do, and it just ended up where I ended up. But I'd never ever thought about stopping it, because it's just, well, you just wouldn't, would you?
No, and likewise, I never had a light bulb moment. Thought, oh, do you know what? I really want to be a company secretary. It just evolved. But if you're doing career advice now, would you be quite binary then? If you go down this route, corporate world, you've got to be aware of this. If you go down this route,
I couldn't do it,
because it's not as black and white as that.
No,
is it?
I couldn't do it. I mean, one, I've been away from it for a reasonable amount of time, so I'm sure it's moved on since then. But I couldn't. Career advise anybody, I don't think, because I don't know enough about all the other stuff that's out there, you know, like becoming, I don't know, working in the National Health Service like your daughter does. Yeah, God. It's a tricky subject, isn't it?
It is, and it's massive, and I guess, you know, I think there's more awareness. It's more part of our vocabulary, isn't it?
Yeah.
But in the old days it was, oh, she's got melancholy.
Yes. Lovely word, that is, isn't it? I think I'm going to say that. I'm feeling a bit melancholic today. Yeah. Yes, that's true, actually. But I don't think men have language, though. I think men struggle. You know, and I've said this before, but if you go down to a pub with a bloke over a pint, you don't start talking about your mental health issues and how you're feeling, do you? You talk about football and...
Exactly.
...and stuff. Whereas women...
Oh, yes.
Conversely, are very, very good at it, I think. Very good.
Well, I love that quote, and I won't quote it verbatim because I don't have that knowledge.
Paraphrase it.
But it was from one of the Dalai Lama's books when he talked about coming to stay in the West and the amazing hospitality. People saying, oh, come and stay here, come and stay there. And he said everything seemed so rosy. And then he confessed that he did find himself just sort of looking in bathroom cupboards. It wasn't a privacy issue, but he said he couldn't believe the volume, the number of people on prescription antidepressants. So I guess it's that sort of...
God.
Imagine if that was a measure in your annual report, percentage of employees on antidepressants.
What a good one. That would be a great one, actually. Honestly. I mean,
and I've only just thought of that, but, you know, it's one of those...
What a good highlighter.
I'm not saying it's a good measure, but it's sort of... It's like you say, it's that... hidden thing, isn't it?
But it's a measure of how many people in your organisation could be suffering, and that you don't even know about them. Blimey. I was going to say something else then, and I keep forgetting it. It must be my age. I know what I was going to talk about. The future.
Yes.
Right. I don't know if you've got anything that you want to bring up, but the future scares me to bloody death, right? Because... if you think about all the trends that are happening, the long-term trends that are happening in the world at the moment, a lot of it driven by climate change. Mm. So, you know, inability to grow enough food, a population that's going to get to 12 billion by the end of the century or something. The tropics going to be broadly uninhabitable. We're going to have 1.5 billion people migrating either north or south. The majority will go north because it's, one, it's nearer in a lot of cases, and two, there's more land available. Three, we've got struggling resources here for health, particularly mental health. Housing is an issue. Food supply chain is an issue. You know, you can just go on and on and on and on. So here we are living in this pressured, capitalistic, patriarchal world. In 50 years' time, I cannot even begin to think what it could look like and how much pressure that will put on your daughter, my sons, my granddaughter now, who is 6 months old. So she's got the next 100 years is absolutely pivotal for us. And I wouldn't say it fills me with despair, but I really, really worry about that. I don't know. Have you ever thought about those sorts of things?
Often. And in terms of, and the volume of news around misinformation that
that
fires it all up as well, doesn't it? You know, truth is a scarcity, isn't it?
I'm right on the verge now of not listening to the news at all.
I listen to it less and less.
Yeah.
I seek out people that inspire me on a regular basis because that's ever more important.
Yeah.
And a good example.
That makes you feel better, though,
it
doesn't
does.
It? Yeah.
And a good example, and he's doing it literally now as we speak. I don't know if you've come across him, Lewis Pugh from Plymouth, who is swimming the length of the Hudson River. Will end up in New York, timed to coincide with some big climate change event. And he's swum all the big oceans to highlight the damage that we're creating to our oceans, because of course rivers feed into oceans, and a casual chuck of a bottle into a river in Herefordshire that ends up in the sea.
Yeah.
And he does it in such a lovely, positive way. So he's really inspiring. And then I happened to come across some of his thinking about leadership and what is the balance between inspiring, being directive without being too authoritarian. And there was one lovely thing that really struck a chord with me, is saying our leaders need to show confidence with humility. Now, how often do you get that?
Well, you don't.
In a big, founder, CEO.
No.
Being able to show humility at the same time.
No.
And that's very powerful when you have that combination, but it's rare, isn't it?
It's. I was just trying to think. I don't think I know anybody who behaves like that.
So he's a good example of somebody who's incredibly inspiring.
Apart from you and I, of course.
Well, obviously.
There's that saying, clearly.
Yeah. You do have to seek out positivity, because otherwise you would get bogged down, don't you?
I go to the, and I know you do, the Literature Festival and Science Festival at Cheltenham.
Mm.
And Claudia Hammond did a number of, she was part curator, actually, in the BBC All in the Mind programme she does. And she did a couple, one of which was Finding Kindness.
Mm.
Or being kind, the search for kindness. Mm. And the other one was finding awe. And one of the things that I've started to do was count my blessings.
Yes.
Right? And we spoke about that, haven't we?
I like to do that in the past. Morning. Yes.
Yeah. And I started to do that. But then I suddenly realised, well, I'm only doing it just to...
Well, no, I literally this morning, it was, thank you for my eyelashes, thank you for my fingers. Because it's like, you wake up and you're grateful things were.
I know, but I can't do that. I find that
difficult.
You
could have died in your sleep, couldn't you?
Well, then you wouldn't be able to do it, would you?
No, then I wouldn't be here now.
No. So, but it's these books about looking for kindness. And so I do that, and I look for awe as a substitute for counting my blessings. So walking around the streets, you just see somebody pick up something that somebody's dropped, or carrying a suitcase down the underground, or, you know, and I do it. I find myself doing it more and more now. Just these little snippets of being kind to somebody, and it doesn't cost me anything.
No, it doesn't. It makes you feel good.
It makes me feel fantastic. Mm. And then the other one is when you... And I'll just use this as an example because we happen to be in London at the moment. But when you walk around London and you look at these buildings and so on, they just take my breath away in some ways. You look at the Shard. I mean, for God's sake, it is huge. You may or may not like the design of it, but by God, it's impressive. You know, and some of the statues, you see, the art. I remember being in I can't remember what it was called, one of the art galleries in Paris. And I literally had my breath taken away by this painting. I can't remember who it was or what it was, but it just felt so much better for a short period of time, but by God, it did enough to do me good.
Well, art has a disproportionate impact on emotions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
yes.
We forget that. And I think, you know, for you and I, obviously, the Super Dry is exciting because actually it was quite creative.
Yeah.
But with it came pressure.
Yeah.
But to you know, when I go to clients where there's none of that creativity, I mean, I just find it so dull.
It is dull.
I really
it?
Struggle.
Well,
with
that's
that
what we both like theatre, don't we?
Yes.
You know, and I know you're a trustee of Everyman Theatre in Cheltenham, and I go a lot.
Mm.
And I always say that if I don't feel differently when I come out of the theatre, it hasn't been good enough.
Yes.
Or I didn't get anything out of it, perhaps. Because it's there to make you feel differently, to make you think
exactly.
differently and get your juices and your emotions going and so on. And that's why the kindness and the awe, just for me, is just so good for my mental health.
I think kindness is a massive thing. And I remember, I don't know, I know it was when I had Amy and being in Cheltenham General and being quite tearful, probably the emotions of... giving birth and all the rest of it, and being quite tearful. And the nurse says, well, why are you crying? I said, because you've been kind to me.
Yeah.
And they, well, what sort of life do you leave? And it's just that.
Yeah. Oh, God, you see, I hate people being kind to me. I know I shouldn't say that, but I do. I don't want people to be kind to me because I'm a man and I'm macho and I'm a finance director and I can do this on my own.
You can let down that guard though, can't you?
I know, but I can't
because
find that
really hard.
Because
the reality is you know how good you feel when you're kind, so you have to indulge someone else
I feel good when I'm being kind to somebody else. I don't want them to be kind to me. So, and I'll give it a really simple example about the theatre, right? I generally tend to go to the theatre on my own.
Mm.
And the reason I go on my own is because I don't want to have somebody else there who's not enjoying it.
Yes, you feel...
I have a sense of responsibility.
Yes, I get that.
So I go on my own. But if somebody asked me to go, of course I'd go. I would absolutely go, and I would really enjoy it, actually. So why don't I think that somebody who comes to me with me to the theatre?
I'm not blaming it on you because it's not. You haven't put on that. You're not a producer. So
no.
They're not going to be unhappy with you if they don't enjoy it, are they?
Well, yeah, because I've persuaded them to go. So, so I feel guilty about it. I feel guilty about that.
And I think that's a warped sense of obligation, isn't
it?
Oh,
I know. God, he should be my therapist.
Yes,
yeah.
I think we need to.
And then
let
I think I'm
go.
Not. I'm not good enough. No, I can't. I can't let it go. It was just. It just won't go. And I think I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough to take somebody to the theatre. I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Whereas you are, the people would go. Well, I've been with you to see.
Yes, you have. Yeah, we went to
Potty. Pantomime.
Yes, we did.
And that was brilliant.
Actually, it was.
And I was resisting, and you'd gone a second time.
I went three times, actually, that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And yeah, because it was bloody funny. It's the ad lib bits that I think are so good. It's, yes, theatre art in the main. And a lot of people don't get that, do they? They sort of poo-poo it a little bit. You know, theatre is a really difficult one. Trying to get young people into theatre, which could be so good for their mental health.
Oh, massively.
Would just be brilliant.
I think it's exciting that Everyman are going to be doing Shakespeare next year with Totty in it. And it's on the curriculum.
With Totty?
Yes, he's planning to be in...
Who's Totty?
Sorry, Tweedy.
Oh, Tweedy. Yeah, Tweedy, yes.
Doing Shakespeare with Tweedy, and it's on the curriculum. I mean, that ticks a number of boxes,
doesn't it? Yeah, but you get all sorts of people coming to that. Because, I mean, he's a clown, obviously, for people who don't know. But you could just imagine the little bits of humour coming into it. Which play are they doing, do you know?
Midsummer Night's Dream, which
is an easy
one.
It is an easy
one,
yeah.
One of the first that I went to see.
It's called with a guy called Puck, isn't it? Because
yes.
I saw there's a guy at the Everyman Theatre who I went to see play Puck in Stroud, actually. There's an amphitheatre, outdoor amphitheatre there. And every time I see him, you can puck off. Which he still finds funny, even after so many times. I think he's just being polite, actually.
But no, a world without theatre arts, which is why it's ever more important to get people who might not have that opportunity into those arenas, because that stirs up emotion, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is good for well-being, outlook, everything. That's all linked, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. How do you feel then about those sorts of things being organised at work? So well-being sessions and all of that.
I mean, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. But does it wow the pants off me and think we've solved mental health issues? No.
No, of course not.
It's moving the pendulum in the right direction.
You see, when I'm sorry I interrupted there, but when I'm feeling pretty grim and I've my black dog's, you know, lurking around behind me.
You'll avoid that, won't you?
Oh, I wouldn't go anywhere near something like that. That would be the worst possible thing you could do. But when you're feeling okay, yeah, great. But then I don't know that
well, with your,
helps.
With your outlook and mine, we'd think, yeah, that's okay for slackers, isn't it? There's still a job to be done.
Yes.
We'd be thinking, we're going to have to carry the slack while they're lying on their yoga mats.
For God's sake, get back to work. What the hell's wrong with you? Yeah.
So don't get me wrong, there's absolutely a place for it. Is it really going to move the dial in terms of reducing stress? Because what are we looking at? We want to reduce stress, blood pressure.
Workload.
Yeah.
But they just come back to what I was saying about, you know, sleep, diet and exercise. Those are really the three things that people don't do enough of or concentrate enough on. You know, I mean, how are you going to sleep when you're pressured at work? You don't sleep very well anyway, do you? You're generally late. Your phone is always on. I mean, that's in fact, Javier, who I spoke to last time, he was he had a phone addiction. He couldn't stop looking at his phone and he had a nervous breakdown because of it. Along with an addiction to exercise. So, you know, and I looked on the train this morning coming here on the tube, and probably 60% of people there were on their phones doing something. I'm thinking.
Well, there's a very good, she comes up, she's a podcaster, and I listened to her podcast a couple of weeks ago, and it was titled, for 45 minutes, How to Break Up with Your Mobile Phone.
Oh God, I shouldn't laugh, should I? But that is funny. The fact that somebody's had to do that's madness.
But that's the level of addiction.
Oh, I'll tell you the other side to it. Well, I was on the train coming here another time, and there was 24 people right on the tube because on the carriage because I was in because I was counting them for the very reason that 8 of them were reading books. Books.
Yeah,
not,
I saw that
not
this morning.
Phones.
Books. Yeah.
And this morning, there's a guy reading a newspaper, which I haven't seen for yonks and yonks and yonks, and another woman reading a book. I thought, bloody hell, that's fantastic.
Mm. Being lost in a book.
Yeah. Oh God. You know, just rather than lost in a phone, and you know, when you stand up as well in the carriageway in the carriage, and you by the door, and you can look over somebody's shoulder, can't you see what they're doing? And all they're doing is they're flicking through bloody Instagram and. Oh, this! I said, "What? You often say, well, why are you doing that? What do you? You don't learn anything. It's trivial.
Just comparing,
rubbish.
And then you're going to feel less adequate on
you. Yeah, which doesn't.
You're not going to compare.
Yeah, which doesn't help mental health for the young ones that are coming through. I despair.
So no, wrapping back to your, what do I think of the future? I do have concerns about mental health for. The younger generations in a bigger way than what you and I have been through, because there's the bombardment. It's the brain bombardment, which is worse than what we went through.
Yeah, but having said that, we didn't go through a war, did we?
No.
So if you think about our parents' generation who did go through the war, that I mean, you can't even begin to imagine what that's like. So at least we haven't had that.
Yes.
But we've got another big, probably arguably bigger impact movement in. Online stuff and all the other things that are going wrong in the world, and then before you know it, some little twat with an accent decides he's going to run over and try and take somebody's land.
Yes.
You know, you just honestly, it's been a delight.
Thank you, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Have we covered what we need to cover?
I don't think we have actually. I think we might have to have another go at it a bit later on.
Yeah.
When you've worked out exactly what it is you need to do to make work life better for people like me.
Perfect.
And then you can come on this show as part of your publication for your book promotion and all of that sort of stuff.
I'd get everyone gardening.
Anyway, thank you.
Pleasure.
So much. Honestly, that was great. That was really good.
Good.
Really good. Enjoyed that.